Well, like I said, I am throwing a bit of an audible at you. So the title in the bulletin is equally not correct. Basically, yeah, I wrote the sermon for this service, and then I started working on the sermon for the next service. And while I was doing that, I was writing some other things, and I realized I wanted to share the other thing a lot more than the two sermons I had just written. So essentially, I'm giving you a little bit of a sneak peek at the article I wrote for Bishop Spong's newsletter. So this actually won't hit the public till next week, but I wanted to share my thoughts on this topic with you. The title is intentionally baiting. It is Dogma and the Perpetuating of a Dead God. In 1966, the cover of Time magazine asked the jarring question, is God dead? It was the first time that Time magazine actually had used an only text front cover, and that impact only added to the striking question, is God dead? Three simple words that for a brief time created quite a stir throughout the United States. Many, as you can imagine, many an angry sermon were delivered in rebuttal. Even Bob Dylan got into the discussion in a Playboy interview saying, if you were God, how would you like to see that written about yourself? The National Review even asked the question if perhaps it was time that was dead. The reality is that the article, it was written by Time's religion editor, John Elson. The reality is that article was much more nuanced than the magazine cover suggested. But those three words and what they might mean, well, that garnished all the attention. Americans were shocked. They were outraged. Some were dismayed. And others were just simply a little bit worried. Now, in reality, it wasn't even a new question. In 1882, German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche had already famously, or infamously, put forth the statement that God is dead. And before that, another German philosopher, George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, had considered the death of God in his book, Phenomenology of Spirit, or Phenomenology of Mind. The word's Geist, which can be mind or spirit, but Phenomenology of Mind of Spirit. I suppose that the question of God is really, it's really an age-old question. As Nietzsche pointed out, before the Age of Enlightenment, it was perhaps a much-needed concept which helped establish morals and values and the order of the universe and even gave legitimacy to governments. But with the rise of science and philosophy, he argued, the role of, or even need for, God was lessened. For Nietzsche, not only was God dead, but humanity was the murderer. Our desire, he argued, our desire and our pursuit to better understand the world, in his opinion, had killed God. Now, Nietzsche didn't understand the death of God to be an entirely good thing. He realized that for many people, the death of God would bring on, well, would bring on despair and meaninglessness. He realized that all the practical purposes for understanding, for the understanding of God that humanity had once believed, well, he realized that they were of little use in an age of enlightenment. But he also realized that humanity was not likely to let go of God all that easily. As he put it, God is dead, but given the way of men, there may still be caves for thousands of years in which his shadow will be shown. He couldn't have been more correct, and the modern understanding of God couldn't have been more damaged because of that. Nietzsche, while himself was an atheist, he wasn't proclaiming the ultimate death of God. He was proclaiming, well, he's proclaiming the death of a God that was needed pre-enlightenment. Not surprisingly, when he made the statement, Christianity took quite a bit of offense to the statement and resisted it. And what we ended up with was a pre-enlightenment God in the age of reason. And we not only ended up with a pre-enlightenment God in the age of reason, but was done so with support systems that were designed to protect and support those very ways of seeing God. And as every year passed, we moved further and further into a more scientific understanding of the world, and the church built up more and more dogma to prop up the concept of God that only had true relevance in a pre-scientific age. See, for me, God is dead, or more precisely, the understanding of God we once had is, well, it should have pushed believers into a deeper pursuit of the truth of God, a deeper pursuit of the reality of God. And instead, we circled the wagons with God in the middle and clung desperately to what we thought we knew in spite of evidence to the contrary. We created essential confessions built upon ancient understandings, and we demanded unfaltering adherence. At times, the perceived threat of anyone thoughtfully challenging the religious establishment and its dearly held dogma, at times that was seen as heretical. People were burned at the stake for doing it. Today we just chase such heretics out of the pulpit or out of the denomination. And rather than actually taking their lives, we simply just destroy their lives. Most of the church requires full loyalty, full fealty, full submission to the establishment. And, you know, in doing so, the modern church continues to perpetuate belief systems that make little to no sense when placed next to modern advances in science and history and philosophy and literary criticism and, yeah, even theology. Many insist on adherence to a belief in the virgin birth when literary criticism and science suggest otherwise. From the Trinity to the divinity of Jesus to the concept of hell, the modern church dogmatically holds on to beliefs that require sort of blind faith rather than the engagement of what the very same people might think of as our God-given ability to think. As Bishop Spong has said, Christians must now come to the understanding that God does not inhabit creeds or theological doctrines shaped with human words. It's the height of human hubris to believe that we can fully understand God, more or less contain that God in creeds and doctrines. And furthermore, our anthropomorphizing of God is a damaging attempt to package God up into something that we can hold on to, which further inhibits our ability to perceive the fullness of God and what God may be. So yes, in my eyes, God is dead, or at least that God, and probably should be. That is the God of most mainline Protestant churches, the God of the Catholic Church, the God of evangelical churches is dead. And, you know, it has been since the 1800s. But we've just continued to insist on worshiping its shadowy vestiges on the walls of our lives. This attachment to a God of ages past also contributes to the decline of the church's relevance in the eyes of the public, particularly in the younger generations. They see our dogmatic adherence to beliefs that can't stand up to modern discoveries as hypocritical and, frankly, as absurd. The church certainly shouldn't ditch its historical beliefs simply in an effort to appease folks in order to gain new members. But equally, the church must stop ignoring these these outside critiques and stop dismissing them as irrelevant or as uninformed. There's a reason that the spiritual but not religious are one of the fastest growing religious movements in the U.S. And unfortunately, one of the reasons is the church itself. It is long past time for the church to shed its futile efforts to cling to a concept of God that was established prior to the scientific age. It's time to hear the voices outside of the establishment who would like to be part of a religious movement, but refuse to check their minds at the door to do so. Yes, yes, it does mean a need for quite a bit of deconstruction as we remove the dogma that carefully props up the dead God of the 17th century and before. It means that religiously powerful people will have to give up many of the rules and regulations that keep them in power. It means questioning the current human-made construct of God, which less than surprisingly makes God's main interest that of meeting the needs of those who constructed the image of God. It means letting go of the need to be correct or have right beliefs and instead to begin valuing more seriously the pursuit of what is true and what is real. A willingness to not know, and in that not knowing, to be propelled into the quest for newly revealed realities of God that advances in science and history and philosophy and literary criticism and theology. These new openings and ideas that are presented through them every day to us. The reality is, it's actually an exciting time to be seeking a fuller understanding of God. It's an exciting time to be considering what your relationship to, toward, and with God is. We live in a time when information is available to us in a way and with an immediacy that it never has been before. We can quickly and easily expose ourselves to a multitude of theological perspectives from religions all over the world and throughout history. Scientific discoveries are revealing realities of our universe that we never previously imagined could be possible. We're learning more and more about how connected all of creation is, how much we impact others, and how much we impact the environment in every action we take, how fragile and how resilient life itself is. And technological advances in archaeology are helping us peel back the layers of many of our religious stories in ways that push us to new understandings of our religious ancestors and of our own theology. Now, that list could go on and on. The real point is that, yes, God is dead. At least that God has been for a long time. But it turns out that we are in a perfect day and age to begin rebuilding our understanding of what God is. The question that will remain is, will our churches be brave enough to risk this exploration with us? Will they be willing to let go of the dogma and trust in the community as we work together to reach a more modern understanding of an ageless God? Up until this point, the majority of churches haven't been willing to do so, forcing most spiritual seekers to go at it alone. And that may be the single most damaging thing the church has done in their pursuit and our pursuit of God. I don't claim to have much hold on the full reality of God, but one of the things that I am more certain about is that God is part of what connects us all. Pursuit of spiritual knowledge on our own is certainly rewarding and revealing. But I'm left to believe that there are certain realities of God that can only be revealed in the connectedness of community. It's time. It is well beyond time for the church to let go of this God of yesteryear lest the church too dies trying to reanimate the dead. Well, is an opportunity for you to respond to the scripture or the message from today. Just a little reminder to, as much as possible, keep it focused and as concise as you can so that other folks will have time to offer their insights as well. Are there those who have something they'd like to share with the community? Elsie? And then we got Nancy right after her.
Thank you, Mark. Yes, I'm Elsie. I think you outlined a really important task, life work, probably. And it requires asking different kinds of questions. I mean, often we're asked, do you believe in God? You know, it's sort of this accusation almost. Instead, when do you feel most connected to other people? What kind of community do you want to live in? What do you want? I went to the program that was at this church last Thursday on restorative justice, which is just one of the many ways, if you want to think of it, that God is revealed in the world, that you can take young people who are committing crimes and feeling despair and change how you listen to them and respond to them, and you get a completely different result, and that's possible in every part of life, that we can get some completely different results and manifest God in ways that are also true.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. It's a great insight.
Mark, thanks for that message. My question to you is, where do you start rebuilding God? I mean, the concept is just too hard for me to think
of. No, I think it's a great question. I mean, for me, it's twofold. So I can only speak personally for me. For me, our biblical texts are still the primary source for understanding who our earliest religious relatives thought God to be. I think what we have to do is figure out how to go back to those and strip away all the assumptions that we've been told we have to bring to it. All of the things we've been told certain stories mean, and look at them again, as the director of our divinity school would say, look at them again as if for the first time. It's a skill that you have to slowly learn to peel back the stuff that you tend to bring to it, and to let the text be alive for itself, and use our scientific advancements in literary criticism, scientific study, and sociology, and what the times were, and start understanding the text through them. But then I think what hasn't been done is put it upside real life experience and understand how the two go together and how life is teaching you about this thing that's bigger than us, this thing we name as God, and let the two be in conversation as you start regrowing and understanding. It's a lot. I think it's important that we've gone far too long propping up an understanding that didn't advance with the new information we have. But it's a great question, because it isn't. You heard me struggling to articulate exactly, because that's what Elsie's right. It's what I've been most recently working on. And I'm still, I have recently posted something about that we're all just well-intentioned fools stumbling in the dark trying to find this thing we call God. I agree. The progressive Christian movement is so broad that there is this tendency for most folks to not commit too much to one particular way of seeing things or doing things. So you get folks who are very evangelical and have what's really a very conservative theology, but they're very progressive in areas of social justice, who use the name progressive Christian, but theologically still looking at this God from the 1800s and before. Well, progressive Christian... almost always, and that's part of what I was getting at, is it's a very broad movement right now. It's in some ways in its early stages historically. it almost always involves a very specific emphasis on social justice. It almost always involves an understanding of God that says that we're all connected in some way. Be that love or grace, whatever, there would be different ways of defining that. No. Yeah, it's frequently connected with something that's going on politically, but it's the teachings are historical. The teachings come from long roots that haven't been spoken about enough from the earliest New Testament texts, particularly the teachings of Jesus. So, but it almost always involves some element of standing up for and advocating with those who've been marginalized in society in some way. And we root it back to the biblical text. Sure, it's a great question. Any others?
I just feel motivated to share something that comes from my past. I always have tried to connect my roots and my present in spite of all the questions I have in my head about scripture and stories and so forth. And what I wanted to share with you today was that one day I asked my mother, back in my college days, I said, "Mom, how do you experience God?" She was the daughter of a missionary born in China, grew up in a very evangelical Baptist family and whatever. And I said, "How do you experience God?" And she said, "Well, Ralph, it's somewhat like swimming. The water holds you up. It's somewhat like breathing. You just breathe in the air unconsciously, and it's all around."
Thanks for sharing it, Ralph. Are there any others? Here and then Elaine.
I was thinking, as you were talking, one of the things is it's helpful to view this as people living back in that age, and they were basically superstitious. I mean, I remember that because of the eclipse we just had would send them into a frenzy because they didn't understand what was happening. And they also believed that the heavens was held up by pillars and that hell was someplace down below. And so it helps to understand that that's where these core beliefs are really coming from the early time. Now, when Christ came along, he obviously was a very insightful person. That, you know, I think that part of the progressive movement is living his teachings, and we don't feel the need to do a responsive reading or the dogma part, because it really has no meaning. It came way back when. Now, if you brought it up to today's date about current times and things we need to support our lives today, that would be different.
Right.
And the other thing that I've heard that I really like, and it made an impression on me, is God created man in his image, and man returned the favor.
That's right. Elaine.
I spent the last 25 years in a Unity church, and doing music and just being a congregant. And if you're familiar with Unity, Unity is Christianity left, meaning they use the Bible, but it's all interpreted metaphysically, every bit of it. And they don't throw out the text because the sacred texts are like a Tibetan mantra that have been prayed over for thousands of years, but they do interpret metaphysically so it has relevance today. Why am I saying telling you this? Is because I want to tell you what I love about this church and love about Mark. You guys are really on the cutting edge because you truly are what I consider a progressive Christian church, because you're the bridge of doing more and more of that, but being able to reach out to what's traditional Christianity and bring them into the modern era in a very, very loving way. So I have been I'm really inspired to be here to hear your messages and to see what you all are doing.
Thanks for sharing that. Very much. Are there any other thoughts before we continue forward?
I have one.
Go right ahead.
There's a hymn number 84, excuse me, in the hymnal. Oh God, our help in ages past, our hope for years to come. How does that fit in? I think that, you know, we can't throw God out completely, but we can certainly have him as our hope for years to come in whatever form, whatever method of working with God or through God that we come up with. Would you comment on that?
Yeah, I think that what I'm arguing for is to honor the past, but don't allow it to become an anchor. And that, I would argue, that since at least the 1800s is what has happened. There was this giant resistance during Enlightenment to not allow God to be dead, and really they ended up just supporting keeping God in one place. And that creates an understanding of God that's more of an anchor for Christian communities, because it holds you in one place and doesn't allow you to engage with what the world is showing us and the things that could broaden our understanding of God. So my argument is to figure out how to honor the past, but in the places where we see we might have had it wrong, to be willing to change our perspectives and get a new and broader understanding of God and move forward with that, because I think it ultimately makes us a healthier and happier individuals, and it makes society a better place in the long run. Does that answer it in some ways?
Yeah, but it still provides connectivity to God.
Absolutely. I think it's essential. Yeah, I think that's essential.